Well, the scoreboard said I lost today, but what the scoreboard doesn't say is what it is I have found.
Back to the Tennis Connected Studios for April 22nd, 2019. I'm Nima Naderi alongside Parsa Sammy, and we're here this week to review the Monte Carlo Masters as well as preview this week's action. Before we begin this week's show, let's introduce Parsa. Welcome back. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. How's it going?
Very good. You know, it's actually starting to really feel like spring out there in Toronto. Getting like maybe mid-70s weather, so it's very, very nice to see. Very compliments, you know, the clay court tennis that I'm seeing over in Europe. We had obviously some surprising results over in Monte Carlo. Action shifts on the men's side this week to Barcelona and Budapest. And then the women really kick it off this week in Stuttgart with an indoor event, which is a little bit weird for me at always, but nevertheless, an event that does very well and draws a lot of great players. So, Parsa, without further ado, we had the Rolex Monte Carlo Masters wrap up over the weekend. Let's give the main sponsor a plug there. Parsa, we had, you know, not Nadal winning this event for the first time in a long time. He's 11-time champion. He's been, you know, cruising there for a few years, especially now. But he was upended in the semifinals by a guy who's actually defeated him a few times on the clay in the last couple of years, in Fabio Fognini, the eventual winner. He took him out very convincingly, actually. He was just hitting lines all over the place and playing amazing. So I want you to just kind of give your thoughts on, is this overall a matchup issue? And do you see this as like something worrisome for Nadal going forwards as he plays Barcelona, then, you know, Madrid and Rome, and then gets to the French? Or is it kind of like an isolated situation? Or do we just have to give Fognini a lot of credit for just playing the lights out and, you know, getting the job done? Because he also beat Zverev too there. He beat a lot of good players.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you see him working out on Instagram and doing all those kinds of things. And at the same time, he's done this whether Nadal's been in peak form or not. And so you know that the game plan for Fognini is very simple with Nadal. And that is take the ball early, hit the ball, and keep Nadal back and force him into positions he doesn't want to be in. And Nadal, for whatever reason, definitely has a matchup problem with Fognini, whether it's the disdain for him personally or the style that he plays, and he just is free-willing and ready to let it fly, and the conditions are heavy there, and the ball was sitting, and so he was giving Fognini a big chance. And then on top of it, you know, Nadal wasn't playing that well that match. I don't think that was his best performance by far in terms of ball striking.
Yes.
And Fognini's the worst guy that he could ever play for that sort of scenario. So it was a little bit of a perfect storm. So I do call it a one-off. I think that it's very good for Nadal to lose a little bit, especially in somewhere where he's, you know, been dominant. And so he'll be a little bit more alarmed moving forward. And I'm really looking to put a whooping on every single person he plays. And I think, you know, there's less than a handful of players that can defeat Nadal on a given day on red clay, and Fognini is one of them. I would say Djokovic is the other, who
yes.
seems to be struggling still. You know, and that's pretty much it. There's not going to be much more that can take Nadal out on clay.
Yeah, and for me it was interesting because, you know, Nadal is obviously one to always give a lot of, you know, respect to his opponents, and he's definitely not a sore loser by any stretch of the imagination. Very grateful, like gracious and everything. But one of the things that he said after he lost to Fognini was, it's probably the worst match I've played on clay in 14 years. So, you know what I mean? Like, that's not, you know, that doesn't very, I don't know. I thought, Yeah, I don't think he likes Fognini that much, kind of like Kyrgios. I think he jives more with guys like Ferrer as an example in terms of work ethic. But, you know, as I mentioned, Parsi is already down in Barcelona smashing balls on center court, doing his thing. And as we would expect, nothing less from such a great clay court champion. And his draw looks pretty good. I mean, he's got some formidable opponents, I think, that he's going to have to worry about throughout Barcelona. So it's a very stacked draw as well, too. We won't necessarily get through like a draw preview, but I'll just give you a quick rundown of what we're looking for in this event. He's got Zverev, who's been struggling. Thiem, who lost early but won Indian Wells. Nishikori, who's been struggling. Tsitsipas, who's playing so-so. Khachanov, who's been struggling. Medvedev, who made the semis last week, but I wouldn't bet on him really going deep in multiple clay events. And then Fognini has already, I'm pretty sure he's going to withdraw. That's what his dad was saying. Shapovalov, who hasn't been playing well. Goffin, same thing. Simon, not really something I think you got to worry about a player. And then Bautista Agut, Dimitrov, TFO, Puy, and maybe OJ Aliassime. Maybe that's the one guy that we can look forward to do some damage here. We'll see. But nevertheless, this tournament is for the taking for him. He's in front of his hometown fans, and I think he's going to be chomping at the bit, really trying to get it done. But before we move on to this week's action a little bit more, what did you think of Djokovic? I mean, Djokovic comes in. He lives in Monte Carlo. He was training a week before. He goes out in three. Third set was pretty bad from him, to be honest, to Medvedev, who's, in my opinion, going to be a top 10 player by the end of the year. And what do we make of Djokovic? I mean, similarly to Nadal, Parsa, I think, Nadal's kind of like how Kyrie Irving described the Boston Celtics, like, good luck beating us in seven games in the playoffs. You know, they just swept their first round opponents 4-0. They're in the second round. And then, is he kind of like this? Like, good luck beating Nadal five sets at the French. And now we have a situation where, Djokovic is like, okay, that's cool, man. Just let me get to Roland Garros and I'll show you what I can do. Because, if you look at now Indian Wells, Miami, and Monte Carlo, he hasn't really gone deep to his standards. And, is that something to worry about? But again, he's won the last three Grand Slams. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, Djokovic, he did look great. At the same time, Medvedev just came out right from the first point. He was making work and work and work for every point. And it was Djokovic, uncharacteristically, not locked in and not sharp. And, he didn't look that great, but at the same time, you have to give a lot of credit to Medvedev. I also believe he's going to be top 10. He is going to be top 10. Let's not even say we believe it's going to happen, barring injury. The guy's very, very good. And he's a tough out, especially in slower conditions. And he's fearless, which is probably the number one characteristic you need to defeat these big guys. And if Djokovic isn't locked in and raring and ready to go, I think there's a little bit of a motivation problem right now for Djokovic. It's not a Grand Slam. It's not what his eye is on. And, the desperation that was there last year with him and his struggles is gone. So, what's he really playing for in Monte Carlo? He's playing for the love and for enjoyment. And those aren't great reasons to dig deep and find a way to win and to will yourself to get to the end. Obviously, he still wants to compete at that level and with that mindset, but there's a little less reasoning to push a little bit further and to really grind yourself out there. And I think he'll be okay, though, Nima. Saying that, I think he'll be very, very okay. There's certain things he does that are just magical compared to other people and other players. And when you can do things like that, you always are going to have a separation. But he is human. He's not perfect. And I do think there's a little bit of a motivation issue in the lower tournaments. I think his eye is on the slams and history. And so I think that's where we'll see his best at Roland Garros at Wimbledon.
Yeah, I think Parsa, from my end, when I look at this, I look at a guy who's, I would combat you in that and saying, okay, well then what's Roger Federer doing? Because he's almost 38 years old and he's out there in Indian Wells in Miami making both finals, winning one of those tournaments, wants to play on clay again. and fully commit himself and enjoy what he's doing. So here's what my issue is with that. I agree with you, and I still think he can turn it on when he wants to. But if you're at this level, at because it's not like these are cupcake tournaments, right? You're still playing, like, imagine, you know, you're in a situation where you're probably going to be able to play, you know, Nadal on a clay court in a final. So if that's the case, that's not pumping you up a little, you know what I mean? Like, that should, for me, be enough motivation to keep it going. Because as an overall mindset, if you're not up for this, like, I'm not talking about playing a 250 in Budapest, like this week, which, again, all due respect to that tournament. But in the, you know, you're playing Monte Carlo, you're going to play Rome, Madrid, you know, Indian Wells, Miami. These are major tournaments, right? And it's, I don't know, I think, you know, if he can get away with it and win another 5, 6, 7 majors, hey, I mean, then, like, he knows best. But for me, I think you need to be able to have that passion and bring it all the time. Because if you look at...
You do need to, I can poke a hole in your argument here, too. So you have to have, you have to compare apples to apples.
Yeah.
How many tournaments does Federer play a year?
Well, at this stage, not as many. But when he was 31, 32, he was playing a lot. Right. You know?
But still... Yeah. But keeping the passion alive and bringing it are two different kinds of things. So you were being critical of him not going deep into tournaments, coming off, you know, off of a lull. It's like, you know, he's just a human. I mean, Federer has been through those lulls. Time schedule, and now we can't compare it because he only plays a living schedule, so that passion is apparent, and the love and the joy is there for every single moment he's on the court. You know, but Federer went through, every player goes through these moments where they go through these peaks and valleys. What makes the great ones, in my opinion, great is that they step up in the biggest moments. And so I think when a big moment will be there, I think they'll be there. At the same time, you've got Nadal to Fognini. How can we address that at a place where he's won 11 times, you know? So what about his motivation? Are we worried about him?
I think that's just a question of age. And because he said that he just couldn't find his game. And if you watch the match prior to that against Pella, I mean, it was a grind fest. The first set took an hour and a half. And I mean, like, and then, you know, Pella didn't have anything left and he lost 6-1 or whatever in the next set. But it was... yeah, he didn't have it, man. And I think that I like what you said at the beginning, because I think it will allow him to, you know, gain momentum now when he really needs it, because he's turning, what, 33 at the end of next month. But by the same token, it would have been okay for him to win this event. And you would have really liked his chances against Dusan Lajovic, with all due respect, in the finals, if he had got through Fognini. But it wasn't meant to be. And he's really good at, you know, turning the page very quickly and getting on to the next order of business, which is this week in Barca and his hometown. Fans are going to probably amp him up and he's going to be ready to go. But you never know. I mean, that's why they just don't give you the trophy before you play, right? You got to go out there and you got to earn your keep every single day, right? So that's what Rafa does, and that's what he's going to end up doing this week. So, with that said, Parsa, let's change gears slightly and move now to the women's event. And we have a good draw this week in Stuttgart. Winner gets a nice Porsche, which I know you'd be happy to hear. So we got Naomi Osaka, who's the top seed here, back in action. New Nike Court athlete. I don't know if you've been following that, Parsa, but she got a sweet deal from Nike. That she's gonna be Pliskova, Kvitova, and also Halep in the house, and then you also have Bertens, following out about 6-7 top 10 players. So on the women's side, you know, it's interesting that Monte Carlo doesn't support a women's draw. I think that's something that I think would add a lot to their event, build a couple more courts. I don't know. I think it's just weird that they don't do it, but then, you know, Madrid and Rome have it. So I think it would complement that well, because it's really feel like the women's clay court season gets kickstarted very late in the year, right? It's almost like, I mean, Charleston's kind of like this, like a Houston event where it doesn't really count. It's in the States. It's not, you can't really, you know, like gravitate results from that one because it's played in the U.S. and not on the European clay. But I don't know. I mean, how do you feel about some of these top players on the women's side? Not necessarily in this draw, but just their games. Like, can Osaka's game translate well to the clay, in your opinion, based on the way she moves and the way she hits the ball?
I mean, where do you think she's at, Nima? It's been a struggle since Australia for her too.
I think she's enjoying the moment. That's what I think. You know, I just got off before we started firing this up. I was on Instagram and she's doing Instagram live. She's like jet lagged, and you know, she was Tsitsipas is in Barcelona. They were doing like some live stuff together, and then, you know, she's just posting a lot of stuff. I think she's enjoying the moment, doing a lot of PR stuff. She was making some food yesterday at one of the restaurants there, and you know, doing poor stuff and sponsor stuff. She just signed this massive Nike deal, and money's being thrown at her left, right, and center. Doing a lot of magazine shoots and whatever it is, which is great for her. You know, congratulations. But how does that translate to her on-court results? I would say probably not that fantastic, to be honest with you. So I think that, yeah, it's good for me. I think in game-wise, I don't like her game for clay. I think somebody like Halep, you know, this court's a little bit different because this is a very fast environment here. So I think that this might bode a little bit well for her. But as an overall going through to the French Open, I think she gets past the fourth round of Roland Garros. You know, that would be for me, you know, very telling. Kerber, another player who's gonna, I think, struggle here. I think Halep is the player, you know, reigning French Open winner player that you have to look for to prevail at this event. What do you think overall?
Terms of Osaka, I really don't. She can put more spin on the ball, I should say, but her movement's going to be a little bit more sluggish, and because of that, she can't get set up behind the ball, and because of that, she won't be able to hit it as big. Either that's going to be the case, or it's going to give her more time, and then she's going to destroy and demolish the draw. So I think it depends how her game sort of goes to what the surface is doing. I think it's very important, as it is for every tournament and every player. I think once we know the conditions, I think we get a better idea. You know, if it's a tournament that Sharapova can win in the past, then maybe it is really a tournament that Osaka can take on as well. I mean, her serve is going to go through the court.
Yes.
So, I mean, I see her having a good shot. She just has to go out and do it. You're right. Halep flies around the court. She's
Yes.
tactically better than ever. She can definitely counter very well. She can use that backhand up the line when the ladies are trying to go inside out, very effectively and very well to expose opponents' weaknesses and movement. You know, she's very, very good on her feet. She's very good in her head now, and for the most part, she's emotionally controlled. And so that's going to lead to somebody who's always going to be in the top three in the world on the women's tour right now, with the exception of winning multiple big ones. She's done everything else, so she's always going to be a favorite.
Okay, and before we wrap up this week's show, I want to get your home country take on Amanda Anisimova. You know, she won a tournament recently, a small event for her first tour title. Really like what I'm seeing from her. Is this a player at only 17 that we can see as a bona fide, like the real deal? Like, what do you think about her game? I mean, she still really acts like a teenager off the court, which I have no problem with because she's backing it up on the court, unlike somebody like Bouchard or whatever we're seeing at the moment where she's completely flaked out, to be honest with you. But it's what do you see in terms of her game, and what are her attributes that you think can take her and continue to take her to the next level, or perhaps will draw her back and not allow her to be where she needs to be?
Well, tell me a little bit more about Eugenie Bouchard. What's going on there?
I don't know. That's a great question. She said she's going to take an indefinite time off of the tour to get healthy again. And some people were speculating that she's pregnant, but looks like that's not the case. Some people were like, just, I don't know. I mean, she's partying every day in Miami right now, having fun with her friends, which again, I don't have a problem with, man. Enjoy your life. That's all good. We're just here to strictly talk about her on-court performance and how she is as a professional tennis player. And if you can manage everything like a Federer, you know what I mean? And, you know, do 60 interviews and do photo shoots and do all this stuff and still win 20 grand slams, who am I to critique you, right? If anything, I'm going to praise you. But when you have a situation of what she's, I mean, the balance for me hasn't been there. And yeah, she's maybe in the top 100, but who cares if she's 75 in the world, right? Like, this is a player who was top 5 in the world in 2014, and now she's, you know, whatever, wherever she's hovering, like high 70s or whatever she is at the moment, right? So
so
for me, it's like, is she happy with that? You know, let's ask her what she thinks ultimately. Maybe she'll say yes, maybe she'll say no. Whatever she says, if she says yes, that's not the right answer. If she says no, that's also not the right answer, because what are you doing about it, right? So it's like both of them, it's, I don't know, man. But anyways, like I said, we Bianca Andreescu is another player who's trying to get healthy. I mean, she was grinding to win Indian Wells, and Miami took a lot out of her. But I mean, look at the upside of that player. It's just off the charts at the moment, right? So, but what do you think of, and if it, look, right now, Bouchard, 81 in the world. So for me, are you happy with that? What is, like, no? Yeah, you're going to get into the French, what, lose first round? Who cares? Like, what is that like? So you, at this point in your career, are you playing for 50 grand? First, you know what I mean? It's like, these things for me, it doesn't make sense as a professional tennis player. Like, you're not, that's not what you trained for as a kid, and you've already made it. You made Wimbledon finals. You're not looking to lose first round of the French. You're not, you can't be happy with that. You know what I mean? If you're a qualifier, that's a different story. You know what I mean? But even then, that's not a good thing. But I don't know. I mean, we'll see what happens with her, but I think there's a long road ahead of her, and perhaps she'll never find it back. But, and a lot of people would probably back me up on that one. But I know there's a lot of Bouchard fans. I've had people on, you know, Twitter say I have a huge disdain for her and all of this stuff, which is completely inaccurate. I would love to see her do well, because she's got 2 million followers on Instagram. You don't think if she's 2 in the world or 1 in the world, that's not good for tennis? That's not going to be on, you know, SportsCenter every day? Of course it is, because she's marketable. She has that persona that people gravitate towards based on her looks, based on her personality, her relatability, her marketability, all of these things that she has going for herself. And if she had the game to match it at a high level, then it would just be at the next level, as I like to say.
What's her thing with Michael Joyce? Was that temporary, or?
I don't know, man. You know, her coaching thing has always been a carousel, so I don't think that that's something that anybody can really predict or really analyze. But
right. So anyway, yeah. Let me answer that Anisimova question. I mean,
yeah,
she's brilliant at taking the ball early, and you don't teach a 17-year-old. Now, she probably was fed millions of balls to hit like that, but what she does when she does take the ball early like that is absolutely lethal, and I use that word very carefully. Lethal is right. She can take the racket completely out of your hand, especially against the bigger hitters who are generally in the higher rankings on tour, you know, the ladies who can hit the ball huge and put it in the court. She can redirect their pace. At the same time, she serves well, and she has a good she can get to a very, very high level. Now, that being said, there are holes in her game, so you don't know whether things can happen with her movement's going to improve, whether her defensive ability is going to improve, what goes on with those kinds of things, and that remains to be seen. But it looks like she's got the right work ethic, it looks like she's got the right frame to do it. She's got to do it, though, Nima. So that I can't answer for you, but she's got something that's lethal, and you definitely need something lethal to be a great champion.
And I'm looking forward to it, because I think that, you know, if you're looking for somebody who's got the total package, I mean, it's right there, even more than anybody that I've seen in a very long time. So, you know, congrats to her so far, and I think that the future looks extremely bright. And we'll see, especially for American tennis, hopefully the guys can pick up, you know. I was happy to see Fritz win a couple, you know. Let's actually finish on Taylor Fritz here before we sign off for this week. What'd you think of him? I mean, he won a couple rounds in Monte Carlo. He got waxed in his third match. But he said that, it's interesting, because I think that clay can be my best surface. Now, do you think that he's, you know, he's dreaming on that one, or do you think that it's legitimate based on how all of the surfaces are relatively similar nowadays, that a guy who maybe is not the best athlete or the best mover can, you know, hit a big enough serve and then get a little bit more time on his groundies and then do some damage? What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, you just hit that on the head. I mean, his serve still goes through the court.
Yeah.
And he's got more time to wallop the ground strokes. And
yeah.
He's in trouble when he gets pushed around a little bit, when he has to get defensive. But you know what? I mean, that's how the hard courts are playing now also, except that it's easier to recover on the hard court than it is on the clay court. I mean, and a lot of that has to do with experience.
Yeah.
So if you grow up on a hard court, you kind of know how to recover on a hard court. And if you grow up on a clay court, you know how to grow up on, you know, recover on a clay court, and you have a little bit more trouble with the speed of a hard court. So it's, you know, a catch-22 in that way. And if he believes he can do it, I'm sure he can do it, Neiman. I mean, that's the way tennis works, and this is the way how mental the sport is. I mean, if the first thing is the belief, the second thing is actually putting into action. So if he's going to put in the work, then he can be a great clay courter. Why not? I mean, it's a different type of breed of a clay courter, but I still think the traditional Nadal model of falling back and hitting high, heavy spin balls and moving the ball around the court and creating angles and doing those kinds of things still will be the detriment of Taylor Fritz. But I think for now, you know, especially something like, you know, in Monte Carlo where it's, you know, slower conditions, I think it gives him plenty of time to get back in the court, and he's got the power to put it through, so why not?
Yeah, yeah, I agree. And you know what? I've always liked Fritz, man. I did an interview with him a couple of years ago at the U.S. Open when I was with you guys. And, I mean, very nice kid, very polite. And, you know, he's got a good head on his shoulders. And, again, guy who I think people will gravitate towards if he can get some big results. A lot of people don't think that he can just because he's a little bit in that Milos frame, you know what I mean, where he's not the best mover or best athlete. But I think he's got a better backhand than Milos. He doesn't definitely have a better serve, even though he's got a great serve. And I don't know. It's
he might have a better all-around... he's still more athletic.
Absolutely, but Milos he's
like
not...
really heavy on his feet. I
mean, for so, sure, yeah. But he's not like... You know, he's not...
It's just pure.
Yeah, it's not natural, for sure. And I think he still has right. to develop a little bit physically. So anyways, we'll see how it goes. But anyways, with that said, Parson and I will be back in a couple weeks to preview the Madrid Masters before we really gear it up for RG in a few weeks after that. In the meantime, make sure to follow Parson at ParsonSammy both on Twitter and on Instagram. You can follow myself at OnMars as well as at TennisConnected. You can download this podcast on iTunes as well as Android. And make sure to check out TennisConnected as well for all of your results, your daily results and editorial pieces. Parson, thank you so much for your time today and for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody out there, once again, for listening. If you have any comments or concerns, make sure to always hit us up. You can know where to find us. Be good. Continue to enjoy the clay court season, and we shall chat with you soon.